million. They talk that that will create about 2 million jobs by April. I just wanted just a clarity before you leave. It's actually 15 billion from the LAP, the left, that will create about 2 million jobs. How would we be able to avoid a similar situation to that of Ntunja, type of corruption on this matter?
Thank you.
That's a question. But then, as you indicate, as also proposed by Honorable Boshoff, we'll find time, maybe sometime in February, to have this meeting where you'll be expanding on the issue of the restructuring.
Honorable Chair, I also have questions on the 15 billion.
All right, you can go ahead then, Honorable Boshoff. Honorable Boshoff, are you there? You are muted, Honorable Boshoff.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
Okay.
The article that appeared in the Sunday Times is very concerning. And I would like to know where the 15 billion comes from, because it's UIF funds, and how the 2 million work opportunities are going to be created. Reading the article, it was then further also stated that some officials, the UIF board members, together with members of the adjudication committee of LAP, were holed up in a Joburg hotel to decide which projects would be supported and backed. Minister, as you know, we barely have 2 months left to implement this ambitious plan, and we would like to have it in writing on how the plan of action will transpire from here. As you know, and as I know, LAP has in the preceding years not even managed to spend what was budgeted. I want to ask you a question. The 2.8 billion that was budgeted for in this financial year, what happened with that? Absolutely nothing. Now you and your department want to add it to the 15 billion to ensure you reach an instruction given to you by the president to create these 2 million work opportunities. Minister, it's not just a question of going ahead and spending this money. There are various processes that need to be followed, which inter alia include an application that has to be made to the Minister of Finance to obtain his permission. I want to know if this has been done. If yes, could this committee be given a copy of the application and then the subsequent response by the Honourable Minister of Finances? And then furthermore, it was stated that you are planning on spending 23 billion on training projects. Could you give us an update on this and who the beneficiaries will be on the 23 billion? And then further in the article, they spoke about allegations that the LAP committee adjudicated 62 billion. And you said it must be brought down to 30 billion with the instruction, no matter what, that the money must be found. If this is the case, Minister, as I said, allegations are being made, can you please provide this House with the resources, where the resources will be found for this alleged project, together with the appropriate control measures and the risk management processes that have been put in place? Minister, furthermore, the UIF's LAP program is definitely not up to par. Are you able to provide this House with with this entity's annual financial statements, its tax certificates, its work experience of every board member? We need to be provided, informed whether they are adequately capacitated, and furthermore, whether they have a functional learner management system and whether they adhere to all their own procedures and criteria. And then, Minister, another glaring fact with regard to LAP is that they are currently an interim committee and may not exist for more than 3 months. But you know that they've been functioning like this for the past 4 years. What will you and your department do to ensure that this committee is a properly constituted committee? I must say, the above sounds like a repeat of the Tudja project and an electioneering tactic. You, Minister, and your department need to come clean. And then I'd also like to say that the unemployment insurance funds are not yours to spend as you wish. These funds belong to the employers and the employees who contribute on a monthly basis. And according to my opinion, they should be afforded the opportunity to have a say as to how their hard-earned money is spent. We cannot allow another debacle like that one during COVID to take place, where it was found that officials were implicated and where companies who did not claim were paid out. And then, Minister, with regard to that, could you or your department give us an update on the vacancy created by the resignation of the DG? Has the department advertised this position, or are we going to see a person acting in this position for years to come? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Kochoff. May also welcome the president of the presence of COSATU, guest in the meeting. Any other questions, Ms. Tafeni? Honorable Tafeni?
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the members and you, Chairperson, and the Minister of Labour. That is a small question, but last time this question, but Minister, as well as you are a minister, please make us proud of members of this committee about the issue of the UIF. There are many issues. There are many issues outside there. The people that are not getting their money of their dead relatives, or that UIF money. So please, Minister, make us clear, more especially as members of the committee, because of course the pendula imibuza abantu mamesibuza about the UIF. When it comes, your relative is passing about a year, you are not getting the UIF back. So please make us clear. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. We're still going to give presentations about the UIF, about the SEE and the compensation fund. There are people that are responsible for those funds that will be responding to questions like yours, Honorable Tafeni. But we wanted just a bite on the opening remarks of the minister and issues that are in the public discourse so that he can clarify those issues. After that, then we'll give to the acting DG to take us through the presentation. He will be able, or she will be able to delegate whoever will be giving us presentation on the three entities. So your question will still be answered, may not necessarily be answered by the minister directly, but there are people that are responsible for these entities. Yeah. Any other questions? Not. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And honorable members, first, to rely on the newspaper publications, and you make that a fact, it's a very grievous mistake. It's better to say...
I'm sorry, Honourable Chair, to interject.
Give us
on a point of order, please.
Give us reports on what
Honourable Chair, on a
but
point of order.
And, to come and go
Let's give him I'll give you a chance, Honorable.
No, it must be done now because he says a fact. I emphatically stated allegations. So he's the one that's putting words in my mouth. I never alluded to the word facts. I spoke about allegations.
To rely on what you
call
allegations.
So he must retract those words, Honorable Chair.
To rely on the allegations from the newspapers and not say we need a detailed report in relation to these issues. It's a very serious mistake. And we are ready to give a full report like we have done to other structures who are requesting these reports, including the processes which are being followed in the LAP program. All the processes of appointing the people who are doing the adjudication, all the processes which are being followed after you have done that adjudication, the due diligence which is being done on those companies which are being given those contracts. And I must emphasize, when I started in the LAP, in the department, I said, I'm not buying a story where people are going to train and leave those people who have been trained after 3 or 6 months to fend for themselves, to look for jobs for themselves without any assistance from those people who have been training, and those people have gone with millions. I said, the leg which I want to add, it's a leg which says, go and look for jobs as part of your contract for those people for a year to 2 years so that they are absorbed in the labor market, be it temporal or permanent. But what LAP is doing, in the main, it's the work readiness programs and for employers to be able to absorb those people. Of course, there will be little parts which are dealing with the skills. This program has been increased by a number of factors we've added. Amongst them, we've said we want to work with the private sector. In others, we've talked about the wage subsidies to some of the companies who are ready to employ. In some of them, we have talked about interdepartmental programs. There are a number, about 7 departments, which are running this program, training the young people in the different areas. And we have said to them, we want to match a rand to a rand with them. What they contribute, what we are contributing, must be 50-50. And then we manage. So it's different programs. Some are short term, some are medium term, some are long term. But also, as you are dealing with these people, you have to pay the stipend. Now, what I wanted to indicate, these many billions which people are talking about, I called the officials who are running LAP. I called the labor activation programs because people have been complaining that. What has happened to the programs which we applied for, which were advertised 3 years ago, which are not moving? Why are they not moving? When you ask this thing from the management, they say, no, it's not us. It is the adjudication committee. When you ask the adjudication, they say, no, we've done our adjudication. It's left with the management to implement that. I called all of them and I said, I've done an assessment, performance assessment as per my targets with the president. I've not been able to meet my targets when it comes to the issue of the job creation. What is going on?
Oh, we lost you for a moment there, Minister. I don't know whether it's on my side. Oh, yeah. So no, it says my network is unstable. Sorry.
It's true. I called these officials. I said to them, we seated with the blame from both sides. Yourselves, you are blaming the committee. The committee is blaming yourselves. What is happening? Because programs are not moving. Why are the programs not moving? I said to them, I want you to give me a proper response and a proper program which has been worked out properly, and I don't want to get into the procurement issues. They came with the figures and they said it has been costed at about 59 billion. I said, where are you going to get the 59 billion? They said, no, we don't have. I said, okay, go and rationalize these programs. It's me who said that. Go and rationalize those programs. They came back with 30 billion. I said, go and rationalize because you don't have that money. Where are you going to get money? And I said, in terms of the liquidity ratios of the particular fund, you must ask the actuaries where we can be able to recall some of the monies. But in recalling those monies, you know the procedures which have to be followed. I can't be involved in those processes. How much can be available? And we were addressed by the actuaries. The actuaries were able to give us the figures which we can be able to recall. And our issue was simple. Currently, the country is faced with a crisis of jobs. That's the issue. And if we increase the jobs, whether you call them short-term, temporal, medium-term, or long-term, those jobs are also going to help to increase even the very revenue of the UIF. Therefore, let's massify these programs, which I've already said right from the beginning of the year. We want to massify its job creation. It's there, even in my performance, what to call, agreement with the president. After the assessment, which I did with the presidency, not with the president, with the presidency, it became very clear that on the job creation, we have not done enough. And we're talking about programs which must run with the other departments, with the private sector. Some of them, we are running them as short-term programs. Now, I said to them, whatever the figure you agree with, if the 15 billion is available, if the 15 billion is available, to approve that money, it must go to all the structures which are supposed to approve this, including the treasurer. We must also go and present to the portfolio committee. And I think the DG, because this is a procurement matter, the DG would be able to give the details of this. If we have to write it down, we are ready to put it down and we can be able to submit it to the parliament. If you need a special session just to discuss LEP, we would be able to do that. I've even said, DG, we must employ, despite the fact that the books are being audited, we must employ a very clear project managers and auditor, what to call firms, who are going to follow all these LEP programs so that we clear the whole thing. I'm not sure about the repeat of the Tuja. Where does it come in terms of this? But the DG would be able to clarify this. By the way, the Tuja thing has not been clarified. The Tuja thing, has not been ended because it's still going to court. That's why we're fighting about this particular issue. So we are ready to give all the details which are needed. Maybe honorable members should have requested that we give all the details than coming up with statements, some of them which are not backed by anything, which are just a newspaper report to sensationalize things. And I think the DG would be able to answer also the question of what are we doing to improve the payments. But I must remind the honorable members, we have to be very strict with our procedures when we do the payment. Remember that during the year of the COVID, there was an audit under pressure. That audit outcome indicated that we're paying people who were not even due because our systems were not ready to deal with that congestion, with those huge numbers. But now we have to be meticulous and ensure that we're paying the right people. There's a lot of fraud out there. Sometimes people submit a legitimate claim, but only to find that the bank, it's not the person who's supposed to be claiming, the bank details. When you go to the bank, you find that those two are clashing. So these are all the things which we have to deal with and be very meticulous when we're dealing with the money. And part of our turnaround is to focus on the ICT, because I think our ICT leaves much to be desired. So the DT would be able to add when they present on the UIF together with the commissioner, but also we can have a special session to come and present on the labor activation program.
Thank you, Minister. I think let's do that. Let's, honorable members, have a date with the minister just on that particular program, so that we can then ask as many questions as you want on that particular program. Maybe sometime in February, even before there's a week in February, just before the SONA, we can find a date on that particular week so that we get this presentation. I don't know if it's a new hand, Honorable Bosho.
It is a new hand, indeed. Okay. I would just like to correct the minister. I see he's sitting in a car and wasn't taking notes, so I'll excuse him for that because some people are very, very busy. But nevertheless, he said I should have asked for reports and not just worked on newspaper articles. I said in my remarks that could he please provide us with written reports everywhere? So please, he's got to listen carefully and not just make his own assumptions. Thank you.
What we'll do then, we will have all these details in the meeting. We are currently waiting for the framework for the first term in Parliament. The first term starts from January. We are now on the fourth term, which will end on the 8th of December. And then the first term will start towards the end of January. So in the first term, we're still waiting for that from the framework for the, I would say, up till the elections. Usually they will estimate maybe around May. The first term will be between January and, say, March. So we're waiting for that so that we know what activities of the NCOP will be taking place during that period, so that we are able then to program our committee meetings for that particular term. We're still waiting for that. As soon as we receive that, we'll be able then to set a date for a briefing on the LAP. Minister, you did not introduce the acting DG. The last time we met, the acting DG was Mr. Sam Rope. I don't know if I'm pronouncing the Moretel. Yeah. I don't know if the minister is still around. Minister? I see that on the name, even though you have not been formally introduced, Dr. Mui, then you please take the platform.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to the members of the Select Committee. Afford me the opportunity, please, Chair, to recognize the Deputy Minister, Mebu Itumelo Moloi, who is in the meeting this morning, and who, in the absence of the minister, will be leading our delegation this morning. And as the chair has indicated, we have a representation from the department and the ministry, but we also have three of our entities present here. And with the permission of the chair, I would wish to provide the representatives who are here in the meeting with us this morning. So if I start with the department, just to indicate that the department, as I've indicated now, we are led by the Deputy Minister and myself as the acting DG in the meeting. And we also have Mr. Tando Wababa, who is the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the ministry. We also have Ms. Matapelo Mataboge, who is also the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Director General afforded me the opportunity then to introduce the delegation from SEE, which this morning is with the CEO, Mr. Sibusiso Sopakati, and also the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Malebo Sebaka. And if I go to the UIF is with the Commissioner, Mr. Teboho Maruping, the Director, Mr. Bongani Mashilu, who's a Director in the Commissioner's Office. And we also have an acting director for monitoring and evaluation being Mr. Cedric Mahuza. And if we look at then the compensation fund, this morning compensation fund is with Ms. Farzana Fakir, who's the acting commissioner, and also the chief director for quiet services, Ms. Julian Sopen, and the chief operations officer, Mr. Johnny Mudiba, and the chief financial officer, Munahe Mukwena. We also have the chief director for corporate services, Ms. Margaret Mazibuko, and the acting chief director for medical benefits, Ms. Dolin Kabinde, and the acting chief director for orthotics and rehabilitation, Ntavise Mahonono, and acting director for internal audit, Sipiwe Zwane, and director anti-corruption and integrity management, Katleho Mutwiri, and Director for Risk Management, Kineilwe Nkabinde, and the Director for ICT, Nompumelelo Mabanga. And finally, we have the Director for Executive Support, Ms. Matshepo Khosa. So these are the this constitute the full delegation this morning. We have only one apology of Mr. Sam Morotova, who's the DDG for Public Employment Services, and he is joining the Minister at a Jobs Fair this morning. Chair, thank you very much. This is the delegation for this morning. The three entities would indeed present their parts in terms of presentations one by one. And I think from the UIF, the commissioner will make the presentation, and from the CF, the acting commissioner, as well as the CEO from the SEE. Thanks for the indulgence, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Let me hand back to you to invite the respective leaders to be able to make their own presentations, the officials, that is. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. We'll start with the SEE. It will be followed by Compensation Fund, and then after that, it will be the UI in that order. Over to you, will it, Mr. Pagati? I don't know if it will be you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Chairperson. Must apologize for the background noise. I'm actually at the ministerial event in the Eastern Cape. But just to get to the presentation, thank you so much once again. Our Deputy Minister, honorable members of the Select Committee, senior leadership of our department. At Supported Employment Enterprises, we have three predetermined objectives in our APP. And early in the current fiscal year, we took a conscious decision as management to deliver 100% achievement across these three deliverables in our APP. So I'll request the Secretariat to go straight to slide number three. Slide number three. And in slide number three, Chairperson, these are our annual performance targets since we report on priority number two of the current medium-term strategy framework, which comprises of job creation and economic transformation. Hence, we have an inescapable responsibility to deliver 150 employment opportunities for persons with disabilities in the current fiscal year. And one of the enablers for us to deliver on our legislative mandate of creating such opportunities is really to drive our sales revenue up in order to increase our financial liquidity and also augment our grant allocation. Hence, we have to grow our sales revenue by 10%. In fact, this is our annual target, and that will allow us to absorb persons with disabilities into employment. We also have to ensure we push for new customer acquisition and retention of current customer base. Hence, we are expected to sign 10 customer agreements or MOUs for the current fiscal year. So if you can go to slide number four. Slide number four, Chairperson, this slide showcases that quarter one and quarter two are demonstrable of our intention to achieve 100% of IPP. If one looks at sales revenue figures, we delivered 145% growth relative to the same period last year. And in quarter two, we delivered 174% growth relative to the same period last year, as the minister has indicated earlier on. Now, that shows that we are deliberate and intentional in growing SBE. Our annual target for MOUs is 10. We've already delivered 9, Chairperson. Sorry for the background noise. We've already delivered 10, which means we are left with only one to achieve for the MTM target for the current fiscal year. And I expect an overachievement on this deliverable as well. And on the absorption of persons with disabilities, I must say,
sorry, we normally absorb in terms of... Separate. I don't know if members can see the slide.
I'm on slide number four, Chairperson.
From my side, it's just blank.
So sorry, I think...
Those small side slides. But now you can't see anything. You can't see anything.
May I request?
I have the same problem.
May I request?
Okay. Matabs, can you?
Apologies.
Okay.
All right, I think, yes, if we can beam slide number four, Matapilo. So,
there's nothing on the screen now. There's nothing on the screen. Just a minute. Okay.
All right.
Maybe you should make it a full slide, Matapilo.
All right. All right, thank you, sir. I'm sure members can see. All right. All right, thank you so much, Chairperson. I think I was still on the absorption of persons with disabilities. I must say, we normally absorb into employment persons with disabilities in quarter three and quarter four, because the first two quarters would have given us an indication of our financial liquidity. But this year, we decided right from the beginning of quarter one to absorb 8 persons with disabilities into employment. And in quarter two, we absorbed 25 persons with disabilities into employment. Although we were below our predetermined target due to a number of reasons, one being the fiscal consolidation by National Treasury. So we also had to respond to the moratorium by National Treasury by really applying conservative measures so that we don't find ourselves into financial difficulty. So then the next slide is really a graphical presentation of our phenomenal performance in growing our sales revenue. And I must say, Honorable Chair, that our environment demands real leaders with enterprise, ingenuity, sound judgment, and effectiveness. And our team delivered just that. Our last year's final figure was 53.4 million for the entire fiscal year. And this year in quarter two, we've already achieved 42.6 million. We still have quarter three and quarter four, which then gives me confidence that there will be an overachievement in this deliverable. And if you look at the other slides, really, these are four customers that are driving our SE growth. And I'm not going to go through all of them, but you can see that 36 million coming from the Western Cape Provincial Health, Northwest 20 million, Northern Cape 12 million, and Mpumalanga FET College, they've contributed to 2 million. So we are growing our customer base to make sure that we boost our financial liquidity. And the next slide really is about the 25, this is basically a split to showcase the 25 persons with disabilities that we absorbed in quarter two. It basically showcases which province did we employ them. And I must make mention, Chairperson, that depending on the demand, you know, it actually drives us to actually put a number of people based on the demand. You will notice that in the Western, if you can move to the next slide, a tabula that will give us a split per province. So you'd notice that in the next slide, you'd see that we absorbed 6 in Potchefstroom, which is Northwest, Western Cape, it's just 1 in our African factory, but I'm not going to go through all of these. But this is just a split. I'm sure that members can actually or have looked at the presentation. So basically the 8 from the first quarter, it will showcase which province, and second quarter as well, it will showcase in which province we've actually absorbed. So we make sure that we target based on demand, but obviously we are conscious of the fact that some other provinces actually are finding it very difficult in terms of employment opportunities. You'd find that in the previous quarters or previous year, we've focused our attention in the Eastern Cape, where we realized that there is a dire need for job creation, particularly for persons with disabilities. Again, the total employment at SEE at the moment is sitting on 943 factory employees, and this is a split per province based on our national footprint. I know that Mpumalanga is not featured there, and again, it's because of the financial constraints that we've experienced, but the plan is still on the cards to establish a factory in Mpumalanga province. I'm sure members have seen that we do receive support from that particular province. We can move to the next slide, which is about the equity progress report for SEE. As you can see that we're responding to the dire need of youth unemployment in our country. So we've been very deliberate and intentional to ensure that we work with special schools across the country. As you can see, our youth employment figures in terms of progress is sitting at 37% of our total employment. But we are very careful around this figure. We are ensuring that those with wealth of experience are then combined with those from special schools to transfer skills so that we build a sustainable environment in terms of productivity and in terms of making sure that the youth is actually part of that process. As you can see, the male and female, we're not there yet, but you can see that there's a lot of effort in terms of balancing the numbers. So we are working very, very strong, particularly on the issues of youth unemployment, particularly those with disabilities. We're trying to make a difference there. Hence, we also invite all social partners to join us in making sure that we absorb as much of youth as possible. If you can move to the next slide, please. I think the next slide is really on the SEE financial figures. You'll see, honored members, that our total grants from Treasury this current fiscal year is 174 million. But if you look at our cost of employment, it's sitting at 204 million, which means we're already operating on a deficit budget. Hence, we are intentional about driving our sales figures, our sales revenue, to make sure we augment what we get from National Treasury. And hence, we're always asking for various departments to support us in buying those goods and services that are offered by persons with disabilities, because the more we get support in terms of purchases, the more we are able then to build that financial liquidity to justify absorbing persons with disabilities into employment. So you can see, I mean, if you look at our mandatory expenses alone at 19.8 million and other expenses at 25.8 million, that gives an idea that the 174 million we received from Treasury is really an underfunded mandate, you know, because our legislative mandate, which is basically a part of the law, is that we must absorb persons with disabilities into employment. So hence we're saying that despite the grant we get, but we would like the select committee to really assist us in ensuring that at least various departments spend at least 5% of their procurement spend purchasing goods and services from persons with disabilities so that we can be able to respond by creating more jobs. We can move to the next slide. I think the next slide is basically also the graphic presentation of our quarter two management accounts. And again, if you look at our sales revenue figures, it's 43.2 million. But if you look at our cost of sale, which is really has been an elephant in the room for us at SEE, we've been trying to look at we've been applying a granular approach to establish really what is the problem around this area. And as members would understand that we work within the government setup, so we are then subjected to the procurement regulations, which means that it's difficult to be a competitive sometime because our direct competitors in the private sector are then able to be agile around these issues, which makes it difficult for us because we have to follow due process. And you would note that our price points are preset and approved by National Treasury, and you'd find that sometimes these prices are approved this week and the next week you've got floor price increases and all of those variables, which it's very difficult to control. So we are working very closely with our management team and those who are assisting us to make sure that we correct the calculation thereof, and we look at all of these other variables that are really, really increasing our cost of sales. But that's basically what I wanted to touch on that. And in terms of our risk, we've actually experienced load shedding, which impacted on our productive capacity and output in our factories. But we have put measures in place in terms of looking at alternative energy source to make sure that that process is addressed. But I'm not going to go through all of the identified risk. I'm sure members have actually had an opportunity to look at that. But the fact of the matter is that we are addressing all of the identified risks, as you can see, the mitigations thereof. We can move to the next slide. The next slide really is also about building our internal capacity across our factory operations to scale up production, because we've signed a number of MOUs with various departments. So we've noted that most of the sales are coming from departments that are more around office furniture. So we are increasing our capacity around that particular expertise. We are also reopening the Durban factory at the end of this financial year. No, I'm wrong. Next year, January, Public Works has actually given us a rough date around that time. So we are putting measures in place and project management in place to make sure that there's efficiency around those variables. So we are reopening Durban factory. We are building market-facing showrooms in our factory to make sure that we develop different streams of revenue. We don't necessarily depend on one stream of revenue. So we are also connecting our beam saw machines to make sure that we offer services to the public directly as well, so that we can build those various revenues to make sure that we are aggressive in getting as much revenue in building much financial capacity that will enable us to actually absorb as many persons with disabilities as possible. We can move to the next slide. And I think I'm almost on the final slide. The next slide is basically about our five key priorities for SEE, just to make sure that we are much more focused. We're saying that employment opportunities for persons with disabilities is our priority. We want to improve on our regress audit opinion. And we'll be focusing on alternative energy source. We're working very closely with Public Works on that. And we also want to make sure that SEE's legal identity is actually finalized. And I'm sure that is in Parliament and with regards to the Amendment of Employment Services Act, which is part of that. And I'm sure it's being looked at. And we're saying that we want to grow our sales figures to 80 million rand. And that will enable us to really be able to to absorb 150% of disabilities and to make sure that we meet our predetermined target for the medium-term strategy framework that is currently running. Chairperson, thank you so much. That's from SEE. Myself and the Chief Financial Officer will be ready to address the questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. The next presentation is from a compensation fund, Fazana Fakir.
Hey, good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Deputy Minister, the DG.
You can just show us your face. Forgot to ask.
Oh, sorry, apologies.
You can identify the. Yeah.
Okay, apologies. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Deputy Minister, the Acting DG, and honourable members of the Select Committee also. Good morning. So I will be presenting the compensation fund. Mem Matapelo, if you can please go on to slide 8, I think. Please. So while she's going to slide 8, Ch- Chairperson, do you mind if I share the... Okay, but he doesn't want me to share. The host has disabled my sharing.
Right?
Yeah. I don't have rights, unfortunately. Yeah.
Can we give hosting rights, please, Committee Secretary?
Will do, sir.
All right. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you. I think just make it a bit easier, because then I know which slide to go to instead of giving instructions.
Maybe Matabelo must take off the presentation, and then you take off the hosting rights from her and give it.
No, I gave her the rights.
Oh, okay. Because the screen is still on Matabelo's name, so she won't be able to move it around.
Okay.
No, I gave her the
hosting
rights.
Oh, okay.
Matabelo must switch on.
Switch off yours there, Matabelo.
Okay, I think it's on mine now, if you can just confirm, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you and apologies for that. So let me just go on to the, sorry, I think this thing is just blocking it. I wanted to put it on slideshow, but it's just blocking it. Okay, so Chairperson, thank you for hosting the compensation panel on this presentation. We will be obviously presenting our progress on our quarter one, which is our performance, and also in our financial performance for both quarters one and quarter two. I'm starting on quarter one. So obviously in quarter one, the legends where it's a green, it means that 100% is complete, and where it's a red, it means that we had achievement of the target between 0 to 99% there. On quarter one, I'm not going to be too cumbersome on quarter one, since I know we're already presenting quarter two also. So in terms of quarter one, the compensation fund had 8 quarterly indicators out of a plan of 23, obviously, annual targets. And we achieved 6 of them, 2 were not achieved, and we then had a 75% achievement on that. Just quickly touching on those indicators, because I know time is short. Obviously, in program one, the 3 indicators, which was the visibility and accessibility strategy, apologies for that tongue tie, and the percentage reduction in vacancy rate, and the number of quarterly and annual reports were all achieved. For program two, which we had just 1 achievement from the percentage of approved benefits, percentage of claims, our target was 90%, but we only achieved 87%. And then I'll touch on the non-achievement also, which is the percentage of medical invoices from program 3, where our target was 85% to be finalized within 30 working days of receipt, and we only achieved 68% there. Our other quarterly target from program 4, which is assistive devices finalized within 15 working days, we had a 97% achievement. So in terms of performance trends, if we look at the performance trends, we are on par with previous financial years, and we're sitting on that 75% target there. Then, Chairperson, I would just like to touch on the provincial breakdown. So on the provincial breakdown of the claims adjudication, which we did not achieve, what we find here is the provinces that underperformed are Gauteng, Eastern Cape first with 88%, and then you have Gauteng, both north and south, not achieving there with 84 and 80 respectively, and northwest with 78 and Western Cape with 85% there. And then on the, 85% of medical invoices, which are finalized within 30 working days of a receipt, you can see the most poor performing performance there by Eastern Cape with 49%, and with Gauteng also in 63%, and Northwest with 66%, and Northern Cape with 57%, Western Cape 71%. So overall, you can see all the provinces did not perform, with the exception of obviously Free State and Mpumalanga just missing it by 1%. And then I will touch on the one that, okay, on assistive devices, we did achieve, but unfortunately, Northwest. And why I'm touching on Northwest now, because it did impact us in quarter two. So I just want to highlight this, that in quarter one, we did not receive any listings and performance information from Northwest, because that did impact us negatively in quarter two. In terms of the financial information, Chairperson, because I'm touching on quarter two also, I'll just quickly just touch on the finances here. And on the finances, you can see revenue. We did have estimates of about 8.9 billion. And I'm sorry, it does show a minus, but just to clear that up, that is the program that we use, that's called Caseware. And unfortunately, it does put over amounts as minus. But what we did receive was about around 2 billion more. But obviously, in terms of the fund and when it comes to revenue, it's not, you know, we raise invoices, we raise estimates, etc. And then we have a cash component, which we then look at. But we did raise invoices. It means we raised invoices of around 2 billion more. And so we would anticipate 122% more in revenue. And in our budget, I think with the first quarter, we see spending in the programs which are aligned to quarter one, and then we have a total budget of 13% there. So basically, also, you can just see on this slide the more detail there of the programs and their expenditures, with COID services obviously paying out a lot of benefits. Okay. Now, I will touch more detail on quarter two and give you much more detail on those slides. So, Chairperson, unfortunately, in quarter two, the fund saw a big dip in performance, which is quite concerning for us as management. We saw in program one where we had 100% achievement, we now are at 67%. Program two now, both quarterly indicators not achieved, sitting at 0%. Program three, only one now still achieving, and sitting at 50%, and program four, the one assistive device indicator, which is a quarterly indicator, sitting at zero. And this is very concerning for management. So what we did do is we said, okay, if we're only achieving three out of the eight quarterly targets, we started now also implementing a more monthly monitoring. And what we then did, because quarter two ended in September, so in brackets, you can see I put there a green just to say at 31st October, because we're doing a monthly monitoring, because this is quite concerning for us. We were then sitting at 58% performance, although that does not, you know, validate what happened in quarter two, because it was quite concerning for us. As I said, from quarter two, program one, unfortunately, the approved visibility and accessibility strategy did not achieve. It sat at 8.4% there. For program two, the previous non-achievement indicator of the percentage of claims, which is a target of 90% within 25 working days, we missed it. We got 85%. But when we looked at our overall adjudication at the end of quarter two, even though it was not within 25 days, 98% of those claims were adjudicated by end of quarter two out of this population of 50,459. The approved benefits also within 10 working days, we dipped there into a 70%. And in my continued slides, I'll give you the reasons for those non-achievements. Percentage of medical invoices, if you remember from quarter one, it was 68%. And that had improved to 81%, but unfortunately, we still missed the target of 85%. However, overall, by quarter two, from the 452,207, I can assure the committee that 89% of those invoices that were received were finalized by end of quarter two, although not meeting the 30 days target of adjudication. And unfortunately, on assistive devices also, we just missed it by 1%, but overall 100% of the pre-auths were finalized by end of quarter two. So what are the reasons for underperformance? I think on the visibility and accessibility strategy, as the minister said, and I will touch on the most important ones, I think the printing of the booklets and the translated version. So our process took longer than we'd expected, which should have been done. The English one should have been done by end of November, end of October. And now the target was to be finalized by end of November, which I've got confirmation that it had been achieved. And then on the underperformance in terms of the claims received and adjudicated, I think the minister did touch on it. The Honorable Minister did touch on it and say, you know, we experienced quite a lot of ICT challenges in terms of slow system response times. We did escalate them to ICT, and additional CETRIC servers were implemented, so that, you know, we can improve the application process and identify opportunities also for system performance. But still at 31st October, we still sat with 85% performance there on that indicator. In terms of the benefit paid, why we had a big dip here from a very good achievement in quarter one is because we were impacted by quite a bit of fraudulent transactions, and this resulted in delayed payment. So the fund had to ensure that the accounts and the money which were transferring to were correct. And so finance, IT and core business instituted a secured payment process. However, this process is quite lengthy. And what we will do is we're also prioritizing our integrated banking services so that we can achieve this target and address the fraud. For medical invoices that were finalized within 30 working days, there was a variance of 4% there. So it's also, again, slow system response times. And we had insufficient number of also human resources, because we have been experiencing quite a substantial increase in medical invoices compared to the previous financial years. And what we did was we did allocate human resources from head office to assist, and at end of October, the performance had improved to 83% there. And with assistive devices, as I pointed out in quarter one, you did see that Northwest did not submit any work for us. So we had to work on that backlog for the Northwest province, and that impacted our overall national performance. However, we are seeing consistent improvements now with Northwest, since head office is giving support there. And at 31st October, we had achieved that target from 94% to 95%. So in terms of performance trends, it's quite worrying, because in 21-22, we had 60%. In quarter two, in 22-23, we had 75%. And now, you know, it's quite concerning to say that this is the worst performance of finance seen at 38%. And it's not an excuse, but we are in the last years of the strat plan, and what we have found with the indicators is that, you know, there's a reduction in the number of days to achieve adjudication, and there's an increase in the percentage. So combining those two variables together, I think from an operational side, we have been struggling, but management and the team is well equipped to address those challenges, which we will do on a monthly basis now, and ensure at the next quarter we see improved performance there. Okay, so I will then go into the financials I know that the committee is always interested in the provinces, also in the provincial performance. So in provincial performance, we did see an improvement with the provinces, but again, you see Gauteng not achieving, Northwest and Western Cape there, with Eastern Cape and KZN just missing the target of 90%. On the medical invoices, also Eastern Cape from that 49% came quite well up to 78%. Gauteng still sitting at non-performance of 68%. And Western Cape, obviously, the other provinces all achieving there. So that did bring up to us to the 81% for quarter two. And I will touch then maybe on the assistive devices. I think, as I pointed out, Northwest brought us down there with the 66% achievement, because they had to look at their backlogs, which you can see the increased number there for a small province, which is 86. On the financial performance, what we find is we did have, again, our revenue increased, and you could see that 2 billion there, and it does look positive. So what we've done by this year, I consulted with the CFO, and he has assured me that even though we raised invoices for 11 billion, we have received cash of around 9 billion in terms of this revenue because of the complexities of the fund in terms of revenue of estimates and provisions, etc., according to the Act. So that does place some complexity in how we record our revenue. But overall, if you look at the revenue, we have achieved 58% of that revenue as per quarter two from a budget of 21.7 billion. And for the expenditure of the programs, if you allow me on the next slide, as you can see, program two is up to par with expenditure, so is program four. Program three, the expenditure is quite down, and that is related to the fact that the fraudulent issues that we are experiencing are targeted mostly at MSP invoices, and that is why you see a dip in the payment here. With program one administration also, there were some SEM contracts that were going quite slow, and that's why we only see 20% expenditure. And so the total budget for quarter two of the fund, we've only used 28% of that budget. And this economic classification slide summarizes that issue for you. As you can see in revenue, we've reached 58% of our target, and total expenditure, we're sitting at 28% there. In terms of the challenges, I won't go through all the slides, Chairperson, because I know I have quite a few slides, but that was more for the reading and the benefit of the committee. I would say on the challenges, we did identify maybe stricter SLAs and processes that we need to implement with PIC on our number of decent jobs and our investments with black asset managers and SRIs, et cetera. And then in terms of our audit opinion also, I think as the minister rightfully pointed out, we are looking at getting better internal control structure so that that could assist us in terms of, you know, improving our audit opinion and getting the correct skills. In terms of the wasteful and fruitless expenditure, what we have identified also, which is an internal factor, is that we need to also up the SEM training to contract managers and end users so they know how to determine the correct service provider performance and also do some reliable data analytics on expenditure. And then on the next slide, I think for irregular expenditure, it's a similar point there. For approved benefits, I think spoke about the fraud, and I spoke about us looking at improving processes around payment. And then on, I think, vocational rehabilitation that we have and our bursaries and our data, et cetera, we want to implement also a comprehensive data capture and management system to track our pensioners. And then on COID services, this one I will touch quite a bit because these relate to the adjudication of claims that we're not achieving. And what we have seen with adjudication of claims is that we do get claims with incomplete information from employers, and that affects the turnaround times, and that's why we don't receive within the 25 days adjudication. But we are doing continuous engagements with the stakeholders, our employers. I spoke about the poor system response time, so we did look at getting additional services and also looking at SLAs with CETA through Dell that should be enforced. And for fraudulent transactions also, I think I've spoken about that point a lot. And I know that the committee asked also in terms of our AGSA findings, et cetera, what are we doing? So I'll just summarize these two slides. So I think AGSA did identify our root causes, which is the ineffective controls, insufficient review and documentation, poor record keeping, inadequate monitoring of our action plan, and insufficient consequence management for poor performance. And the implementations that we are doing is that we are going to ensure a successful execution of our action plans, and we have established a rigorous and comprehensive system for managing consequences related to poor performance. Also, our audit action plan addresses root causes for internal control deficiencies, which will result in the enhancement of preventative and detective controls. Our source document challenges are going to be prioritized in a dedicated project with committed timelines. And the most important points maybe I want to also touch on is that the key areas that impact the audit operational controls and SOPs are to be updated as per AG findings. And key areas that we are going to prioritize from operations and the financials are our revenue, benefit payments, and our investments, which are, those are the key areas in terms of our disclaimer paragraphs. Progress on our 22-23 audit. 21-22 was only finalized in September 2023 due to CF, and I think the head at that time last year, requesting a deferral of the AGSA audit for the 21-22 financials to 2023 in order to address prior findings. And but the audit for our 2022-23 has commenced on 31st October. We submitted our financials and it's currently underway. AGSA has told us that in December, I think a lot of their auditees go on study leave, etc. So with that anticipation, we should finalize by end of January 2024, and we then have to obviously compile the annual report with the updated audited financials. And so therefore we anticipate the timeline to table to Parliament on 31st March due to that due process that must be followed. So I won't touch on all the slides, but just to conclude that we remain committed to resolve our AGSA findings and realize the strategic objective of an improved audit outcome for the 23-24 financial year in line with our strategic objective there. In terms of the NDP specific priorities, maybe I won't go through all those slides, but I just wanted to say, I think all those indicators that I've spoken about, the CF APP performance are linked to the MTSF priority one, which is a capable, ethical and developmental state, and MTSF priority four, which is consolidating the social wage through reliable and basic services. And these are the indicators that we have there, which is our improved assessment on return of earnings, our increased assets, and our improved outcome that link to the MTSF priority one and four, and obviously our wasteful and fruitless expenditure and reduced irregular expenditure, and the percentage resolution of reported incidents of corruption in the fund as an indicator, and our improved ethical culture. And for MTSF priority two, economic transformation and job creation, and MTSF priority four, consolidating the social wage through reliable and quality basic services. I think I've touched on those indicators, which is the investment indicators, and our finalization of our compensation benefits, our percentage implementation accessibility of our visibility program, improved medical benefits, the finalization of those invoices, together with the rehabilitation and reintegration of injured workers, which are then linked to those two MTSF priorities, which is economic transformation, job creation, and the MTSF 4, consolidating the social wage through reliable and quality basic services. And just to maybe summarize, with the 70% of those indicators, we are well on our way on achieving those outcomes, with the challenges being obviously in the investment space due to the COVID and the economy. And the other challenge also maybe being the fact that on the fruitless and wasteful and irregular, we have historical fruitless and wasteful incidents on our register that are proving a bit hard for us to resolve due to the lack of documentation, et cetera, since they around, you know, they go back as 2014, 2010, et cetera. but management is finding a way of classifying those transactions and looking at how National Treasury can condone those transactions for us. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members of the Standing Committee, the TM, and the Acting DG. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Commissioner Tebogo Maropin.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members, and recognizing the Deputy Minister Memoloi and the Acting DG, Dr. Alec Moemi. Also, Matapela, are you flighting? So we can start, or should we, can you give us rise to flight? Thank you. Chair, I'm going to focus on specific slides so that we can move with speed. Chair, if you go to slide number 4 with Matapelo, after the COVID pandemic, we had to refocus the unemployment insurance fund to lift up certain areas that we believe were mission critical so that we can refocus the institution, because after COVID, our focus was based on COVID and the amount of money that we paid during the process. Our performance dropped as a result, and we needed to change how we're doing our work. And these are the 12 priorities, Chair, that we lifted up. And what we're reporting today is just but one of those priorities, which is our performance as a fund. Having paid COVID tariffs, our financial sustainability was a bit of a suspect, and we're a bit concerned about that. Labor activation, we lifted up because of the risk that we raised, the fund's image. I think one of the members raised a question about the citizen focus. We thought citizen focus is a matter. Information technology is equally important because it drives the ease of doing business with UIF and also paying our benefits. Staff morale, progress and wasteful expenditure, clean audit, COVID tariffs, the emphasis there is to follow the money that was paid, and fraud case and risk management, governance and combined assurance. If you go to slide number 5, I'm just going straight to how we've performed. On slide number 5, while reflecting, Chair, if you can see that in quarter one of 2022-23, our performance had significantly dropped to 31%. 23-24, there was a slight improvement to 68%, but in quarter two of 2022-23, we dropped even further to 14%. But we've since put measures in place, amongst which is consequence management and improvement in performance, and now we are sitting in the quarter that we are reporting now, we are sitting at 84%. Now, if you compare the two quarters, quarter one of this year, we're at 68%. We've improved now even further to 84%. And then look at where we've been previously. Our lowest was 14% and 31%. If you go to slide number 6, just to give the members assurance of our financial position, I think the Minister did touch in this area. I think since companies have become aware of the role that UIF plays, and you can see that quarter-to-quarter comparison, our contribution has increased by 5.69% on quarter-to-quarter, from 11.5 billion to 12.2. Our investment income has also increased by 10.7%. We've given the numbers there. And also interest earned from investment, we've seen a 13% increase. Now, all of this performance has enabled us to send an additional 2.3 billion rands to PIC to reinvest and grow that portfolio. Now, just on the labor activation, what I want to lift up here is the one of our intervention is temporary employee relief scheme. What we have not reported before is when we preserve jobs, what does it mean in terms of contributions, and what does it mean in terms of benefits saved? What we are reflecting here is that for the quarter in question, we're able to preserve 8,500 jobs. If this 8,500 jobs, if this individual had lost these jobs, it would have meant 2.9 million rands a month would have been lost in contributions. But it would also have meant that we would have paid 569 million rands towards paying their benefits to these individuals. And now that's a sign that as we preserve jobs, that we are saving on contributions, we are also saving on the contributions, we are also saving on the benefits that we could have paid in the state. And if you go to slide number 7, on slide number 7, Chair, what I want to lift up here is in order for us to improve our performance as a fund, one of the initiatives we've implemented is our initiative with Absa Bank, which have made it possible for our forms to be available on every Absa ATM for the Absa people with an Absa account. Now the intention here is to move people away from our labor centers and enable them to do the application online. And that's why we went through this journey with Absa. And so far, 33,000 people, we've been able to move 33,000 people from our queues to queue for this form. They're able to download this form from the ATM, send them to their own email and attach them to the online platform and apply online without even coming to the labor center. We've done the same with Capitec. We'll be launching that solution soon once we find time with the CEO of Capitec. It will be doing the same thing as the Absa solution. We are equally engaging other banks to do the same, because part of this solution is to ensure that we reduce risk as far as possible and fraud. If we can go to slide number 7, number 8, sorry. On slide number 8, what we are showing here with this slide, Usmatapolo, one of the issues that we've encountered quite often is the issue of risk and people trying to steal from the fund either by submitting fraudulent claim or submitting multiple claims. We've introduced now a cyber security platform. This platform functions between our systems and is able to track any unusual activity on our platform. In this way, we're able to pick up fraudulent activities or unusual activities on our platform. A key also to our ICT deployment is the USSD, the mobile app. These two solutions, Chair, you are able to inquire on your claim, you are able to do a continuation of payment, you are also able to issue a complaint. Now, most of the people in our queues are coming to do a continuation of payment. And due to this solution, we've been able to remove over 500,000 people from coming to our centers. But in the next reporting cycle, we'll be reporting on how many people are now using the USSD to avoid coming to our center just to do a continuous payment. They can do it in the comfort of their phone. And the USSD and the mobile app, this solution, data is catered for by the department. The users don't have to spend on data. They also can use the USSD, you use it on the small 200 rand phone or what you call in the township people, depending on where you're coming from. But these are small phones where you just do *134 *843# and you're able to transact and engage the fund. And then with the more advanced individuals with smartphones, they can use the mobile app and to do the same thing. And these solutions, Chair, are intended to remove people from our centers. And then getting into the performance, Chair, on slide 14, I'm just giving the committee confirmation, also my table slide 14, that quarter one of our performance was audited by internal audit, and they've confirmed that the 68% that we claim to have achieved is indeed the 68% achieved. Also my table slide 14, please. And then quarter two is going through audit right now, and they're going to confirm to us if the 84% that we are purporting to have achieved is the one. Yeah, slide 14. Yes, this is just a confirmation from internal audit that they've audited quarter one, and they've given us green light that the 68% that we claim to have achieved is indeed supported by credible evidence. And when we are doing this, Chair, so that we make sure that when we do our annual performance report, we've been able to test throughout the year to make sure that our performance is supported by credible evidence, and that's what is behind having internal audit each quarter. Then, Chair, on slide 15, I'm starting to do a comparison of quarter one and quarter two. Slide number 15, what's happened? On slide 15, Chair, what we are reflecting here is in quarter one, we're sitting at 68%, and in quarter two, we improved to 84%, which reflects a 16% improvement in our performance. In the main, we took...
Sorry, Chair, can we see the slide, please, because we're still on slide 14.
Okay.
What's my chapter on slide 15?
Maybe, Commissioner, you can get the hosting right so that you direct the presentation yourself.
Yes, multiple, you've disabled us to share. Can you enable us to share on your side?
Grace? This Grace?
I'm trying to put him on as a co-host, but Matebula must switch off. Yo, Mataps.
Yeah. Matap, can you switch off from your side?
Okay.
All right.
Co-host.
We are still disabled.
Yes, I've made you a co-host, Mr. Marupeng.
You are now the co-host, I can see.
You are the co-host.
I can see it from this side here.
You can slide the presentation.
You can share the presentation, Commissioner. You are the co-host.
Can you call the other table, Homarupin, please? We're trying to manage any possible disconnection, so we connected with two devices, Chair. Sorry. We're worried that we could be disconnected for some reason.
Oh, there are two.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Okay, I've done.
You've done. Okay, thank you very much. Now you're co-hosting.
Okay.
Yeah, slide number 15, Chair.
Honorable Bosso, yeah. Is that the one?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I can see it.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Bosso, for letting us. On slide number 15, Chair, what we're highlighting here is our movement in quarter one. Our movement in quarter one, we're sitting at 68%. Quarter four, we have improved to 84%. The major area where we drove performance is the administration area, which is the area that supports business and ensures that business functions. And in that space, we make sure that administration is able to do what needs to be done to support the core, which is this operation and labor activation. I'm going to show now when you go through the other slides. And then on slide 16, I'm just showing, is a repeat of slide number 15, so I'll skip the slide, Chair. If you can go to slide number 17. On slide 17, what we're showing is the areas where we improved in quarter two as compared to quarter one. In quarter two, we had missed the auditor's RFIs within 3 days, and we improved in quarter two and achieved the 26% that we had planned. And then for POPIA, which is the protection of information, we've achieved that target, and also the investigation cases, both simple and complex. And the invoices were still on par, but I think, Chair, this is one target that bothers me throughout the financial years. If you miss just one target here, you could be sitting at 99.9. And you've missed the target because you need to be 100%. But so far, we are on par for both quarter one and quarter two. And I think even in quarter three, we are safe. I think the vacancy rate significantly dropped this target. The vacancy that we had, now we're sitting at 3%. We'll continue to drive the target further so that at least we reduce the vacancies that we have as UIF. Even though there's movement within the fund, but at least it's under control. In quarter one, for COVID tests, the audit firms struggled a bit, especially in the beginning of the year. I think some of the companies did not have access to the main companies, but in quarter two, we managed to arrest the situation and improve our performance. Then on slide 18, maybe I can just emphasize the red in particular. The workers affected by business unrest. This has been one of our greatest struggles because some of these companies that were affected by business unrest in KZN Gauteng, some of them didn't survive the business unrest and closed down. So when you go to audit and confirm that indeed the business is functional and the money was used appropriately, sometimes you don't find them until you bring in the law enforcement agency and then they start to respond positively. But this is also our program one, where we continue to have our finger on the pulse to support business. Then in the next slide, on slide number 19, I think the one target that we struggled with in quarter one was the compliance with the approved strategic asset allocation with PIC. Here we had a misalignment with PIC because their reporting timelines were just a month behind, but they've now realigned. And that's why in quarter two, we were able to get the necessary evidence to confirm that we've achieved. And PIC is keeping within the mandate of investment, because the money is broken down into different portfolios, and we're keeping track of that performance. The survey in quarter one, we couldn't deliver, but in quarter two, we arrested the situation again. And once again, it was an issue of consequence management, because I asked the manager to provide an explanation why they should not be disciplined for missing this target. And they pull up their songs for both targets with the blueprint and the client services. Then in the business operations, and this is where now benefits are paid, that's slide number 21. This target, we've been able to achieve this one, I think in the main, because we've automated this target, and therefore it's much easier now to be able to ensure that registration happens within a day. But there are still those that are still submitting manual registration documents to the URF. But the intention is to reduce this registration even to a few hours, that you should go online, register, and get your URF reference number right on the spot. And therefore, I think as the time goes, this is one of the targets that we might remove from the ATP as we automate, as our automation is used by everyone. And then in the next slide, Chair, slide 22. Now, slide 22, in quarter one, all the provinces met this target at 95%. But in quarter two, we introduced the USSD in quarter two, and we introduced the UIFF. We also integrated our two platforms, the Visual Office and the CI. And all of these to make sure that processing happens faster. But as we introduce the two platforms, the volume that we received from the USSD, the citizens were very excited and started going on the USSD, and they started pulling through their continuation of payments. And as they pulled through, the volumes were too high to manage. But we've now arrested the storage meta, and everything now is on par. We anticipate that in quarter three and quarter four, we'll be able to achieve this target again and bring it back to the performance of quarter one. And then in slide number 23, it was the same problem that the team encountered here, but it affected those provinces that were struggling with network, in particular the Eastern Cape. The closest to Inabi, the Eastern Cape, and there's areas that are far and that will struggle with networks. So those areas were affected the most by the introduction of the USSD. But overall, we achieved the target. only Eastern Cape and Western Cape. At the head office, Georgia, only the few cases that we received and the four that were missed. And then on slide number 24, we start off with labor. Slide number 24 is the in-service target chest. Now, with this performance, this is one of the targets that we've missed marginally by 2%. Now, once again, this was driven in the main by the integration of these platforms. They affect different legs in the process. And now that those legs is now sorted, is now integrated, because these processes were predominantly manual and wanted to get rid of any manual intervention in the process. That once you submitted, it must integrate to Visual Office, integrate to CII. The USSD, when you did in your smartphone, it was integrated to all the platforms speedily. And we had a bit of teething process problems in quarter two when it deployed, and now we've addressed those teething processes. And we are on par. We anticipate that in the remaining two quarters, these targets will be achieved. Now we can move to labor activation slide 27. In labor activation, we've achieved all targets except for two. The one target of beneficiaries being trained, here, Chair, we had appointed the service providers to get people into employment opportunities, but the employment, the recruitment took a bit longer than we had anticipated, and the students started a bit late in class. They started in quarter three, so we anticipate that quarter three and quarter four will be able to achieve this target. And the last one on 80 business enterprise supported on slide 28, the main hiccup with this one was the structure of the report that we received from Productivity SA. It didn't meet the technical indicator descriptor, and therefore we didn't recognize that performance was achieved. We kept it aside because it would have failed the single indicator descriptor requirement, and therefore even internal audit would not have recognized it. We did not give internal audit an evidence that we also knew was not meeting the requirements. But now this target has now been addressed. They've given us a report that meets the requirements, and in the remaining quarters, we'll surpass this target because they've supported more than 80 companies so far as Productivity SA. It's just a reporting requirement that they needed to address. Then, Chair, we should stay to slide number 30 to look at the financial position of the fund. I think, Chair, what we're lifting up on this slide in terms of our financial position is that the fund continues to be strong. Our contribution revenue, as I said in the earlier slide, has improved by 5.69%. Other income, though it has dropped, it's followed up in other improvement areas across. And investment revenue has improved by 10.7%. But overall, our income for the two quarters has increased by 7.25%, which puts us on solid ground as a fund. And if you go to slide 31 to look at expenditure, it dropped by 12%. But in fact, what we had projected for this quarter was we were going to pay more COVID tariffs, outstanding COVID tariffs payments, but we didn't pay more because companies didn't update the records that we needed them to update. As a result, those COVID tariffs payments remain open. We are communicating with these companies to update their records so that we can start processing those payments for COVID tariffs. But other than that, our expenditure is on par once we can clear the COVID tariffs payment. And Chair, if you go to slide number 38, the statement of financial position. I think, Chair, what we want to reflect here on this slide, we just want to show the committee that in 2020, when URF contributed towards COVID tariffs, we are sitting at 180 billion rand. We paid the 60 billion rand. We paid for workers affected by business unrest. And we also paid for the flood. And our portfolio dropped to about just over 100 billion rands. In September 2022, we improved to 125 billion rands. And currently, we have improved even further at 140 billion rand. So the fund is slowly but surely flowing back to the 180 billion rand or more. But I think the fund is progressively improving and strengthening as we go, Chair. And then the last slide that I'll talk to is slide number 42. On slide number 42, we're just giving a progress on what we are doing with respect to our procurement plan, just to indicate that with the procurement plan, the things that we have planned for, we are on par in most areas. We are sitting at 25% for specification. Some of them are already at appointment stage, but we're moving with speed to make sure that the things that we require to get the fund going in the procurement space are implemented as per the plan. Chair, I'm going to pause here, Chair, and we'll take questions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Commissioner, for the presentation, and also thanks to Commissioner Fakir and CEO Kagati. Perhaps there was this question or statement by Honorable Kafeni, Commissioner Marfin. If maybe you can circulate maybe through DG, if, with your permission, circulate the contact people in the labor centers in each province, so that members can know, because we can't, members cannot be every time we have a meeting, they raise issues about lack of response. And it would mean, therefore, you must now get all the details first before you respond. But if they do have the contact details of the provincial directors and the managers in the labor centers, I think that goes for the compensation fund as well. If those details could be given to the committee secretary so that she shares with members. We'll also encourage members to share with other members who are not a part of this committee, so that in their constituent offices, they have the names of people to contact on issues of a compensation fund or UIF. If we can have that information submitted to the office. We're now taking questions. They start with Honorable Bosho, followed by Honorable Ambassador Dango. Are there any other hands?
Musodi, Chair.
Honorable Musodi, Honorable Muimang, in that order, please. Honorable Bosho, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to the presenters. Let's start with the SEE. I would like to know, well, let's compliment them on seeing a sales growth. That's very good. But I would like to ask the department, when will they be looking into the establishment of an SEE in Mpumalanga? This is very serious, as the people of Mpumalanga really feel left out, as Mpumalanga is the only province without an SEE. And I know for a fact there are many, many schools and places that cater for the people with disabilities. But after their schooling, there is nowhere that they can go, because invariably people with disabilities aren't taken up into employment in ordinary businesses. So if we can get a report on that and whether it is on the table. Secondly, the compensation fund. I heard Ms. Faki speaking boldly about all the internal structures that will be put into place, and then also looking at the SEM training, etc., etc. Could she please give us a timeline of when all this will be instituted? Because it's no use speaking of it, but we have no idea when the implementation date will be, because we need to curb the wasteful and irregular expenditure as well as any fraudulent activities that are taking place. Then with regard to the compensation fund, I'd like to ask what the current status of the COID Amendment Act is. We are all aware that it was signed into law in April 2023 and that the compensation fund aimed at implementing it by January 2024. But Chair, unfortunately, we have not been given any feedback regarding progress, et cetera, et cetera. I also know that according to the Acting Commissioner, this amendment act has set three sets of regulations that require public comment. And to date, only the rehabilitation and return to work regulations have been published for comment. Could she please expatiate on the other regulations and why they have not been drafted and distributed for public comment, especially in light of their target for implementation being January 2024. And then according to a portfolio committee meeting held on 20 September, the Acting Commissioner said that the rehabilitation and return to work regulations would be finalized by the end of October 2023. As you know, we are now nearing the end of November and the close of Parliament for the December recess, and nothing has been publicly communicated to us. Therefore, in view of this, can you provide us with an update on how many comments were received, what processes have taken place to work through these comments, and whether these comments will be shared with the committee? I would also then like to know what their next action steps will be. So an update would be appreciated with regard to the COID Amendment Act. With regard to the Unemployment Insurance Fund, I would like to know whether this committee could be provided the opportunity to scrutinize the forensic report on the $5 billion Tujaat debacle. I think it's about a 220-page report. We have seen so many articles in the media, and it makes me wonder what is being kept from us. And therefore, I ask that the minister also indicate whether the DG and the UIF persons have provided reasons as to why they must not be suspended. Because remember, in our last meeting, the minister alluded to the fact that he will ask them for a report on this. And then the unbundling of the UIF and the compensation fund from the department by April 2024. In his opening remarks, the minister again alluded to this. Can we be given an update on that? And then I would also like to mention that we know Business Unity South Africa has made a call to place the UIF under administration, and I couldn't agree more. Even the DA has asked that the receiver of revenue take over the administration because of the situation that they find themselves in. Then I would also like to know the TERS monies. The commissioner spoke about following the money approach. Could he give us feedback on how they are faring or where they are standing in regard to this? And then he spoke about the new online apps and the USSD applications that are available, which is very good. We are in the fourth industrial revolution. But I would like to know, if we are moving towards that, I'm not saying that the labor centers are going to close down, but labor centers work will be minimized. Is this not going to have an impact on the staff complement? And then just as a point of interest, reading this morning, I saw that SAPU has not paid over the deductions made from employees with regard to UIF. Could the commissioner or the acting commissioner share with us what will be done in this instance? Because if these employees are to be retrenched, how are they going to access the benefits that they have paid to SAPU, but SAPU not paying it over to the UIF is going to leave them in a state of despair because they will have no money that to keep them going for until they find another job, which at this point in time is very difficult because we know that the economic climate is not doing very well. We're actually in a crisis. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Boshoff. The commissioner for UIF is a commissioner, but then there's an acting commissioner for compensation fund. Maybe the DG will explain, because the last time we met with the compensation fund, we were dealing with the, also with the department, we're dealing with the COIT amendment. We did have a commissioner. But now we hear of an acting commissioner. Maybe the teacher will explain why we where is a commissioner. Honorable
Chairperson.
If
I may, I'm going to run away.
Let's just hear Honorable Mosodi first, Ambassador Dam.
Chairperson, sorry to disturb you. I ask honorable members just to give opportunity to ask maybe one or two questions because I'm going to see my son is not well, Chair.
Okay.
If I can allow me.
Just give a chance because I did see the message that her son is not well. Just let's give a chance to ask questions and then you'll follow immediately after her. Over to you, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me greet the Deputy Minister and the department, Honorable Chairperson, and our staff. Chair, my first question is going to be on slide 25 regarding the performance indicator of requests for assistive device to be delivered within 15 working days. My question, Chairperson, is it is rather concerning to know that Northwest Province does not entry in terms of scores. What is the explanation for this omission where all other provinces are performing particularly well on this performance indicator? If there is any backlog on this deliverable, what are the cause and remedial action to avoid recurring of this challenge, Honorable Chairperson? That is the first question that I want to ask, Honorable Chair. The second one, Honorable Chairperson, on slide 14, the entity reports as 5.6% achievement in the implementation of programs with regard to the approval, visible and accessible strategy. Could you please explain what is strategy entails and what does it seek to achieve, Honorable Chairperson? On the issue of reduction and vacancy rate, can the department explain to the committee in numerous terms as the how many positions will fill out of the funded posts of this establishment, Honorable Chairperson? The last one is just a comment, Chairperson, on the issue of supported employment enterprises. The overachievement in growth in slides for goods and services is very encouraging and highly appreciate commendable Chairperson. That one is only my comment. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shodi. Honorable Ambassador Dango.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is to the ACE, particularly on slide number 4. The targets were not met in the first quarter. Will the targets be met in the subsequent quarters? And what are the challenges in not achieving those targets? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tango. Honorable Mwima.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to yourself and Honorable Members. and the PM and their team. The first one on the SEE, the spread of the factory employees across the country is well known, but there are concerns around factories in Northwest where Northwest and Limpopo, where the people employed to 12 to 45 and also 42 respectively. While other factories are hovering around 73%. Just to check as to the discipline in Devon, because it is important that there are tools. So what are the challenges that led to the closure? And probably also explain the reasons to why this Northwest is not performing up to the maximum of your average. The second one relates to the compensation fund, slide 15 on program 2. It's more around the percentage of claims to finalize within the property data as an indicator. We realized that this was not achieved. Very easy this could be. Was the target not achieved? To the slide 15 also, there's a reflection on how performance was done due to the medical invoices finalized within 30 days. What the study indicates probably the reasons could be provided as to why. Then the ICT challenge on slide 69 is well reflected, particularly in relation to program 3. The understanding is recorded there. Just about 25% and only 1.3% of 5 billion is reflected by the end of September 2023. What is it that is being done to deal with these challenges of understanding? And what is it that is being done to make sure that the ICT challenge is also addressed? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I hope they've heard you, Chair, because your sound was not that good. But I hope your question has been heard. Maybe just the SEE, maybe if you can explain whether you, especially the provinces that managed to procure from yourself. How did you do it? Do you have a marketing strategy? Do you go out to provinces and sell your products? Because I'm worried about especially those provinces that are not included yet. You have factories in these provinces. I know, for example, my province, the Eastern Cape, we usually around the first few weeks of January and July, we visit schools in January to check the state of readiness. You find that sometimes the schools don't have the desks, yet the SEE manufactured desks. I don't know whether it's a question of them not being aware of your existence. So that's why I'm checking your market strategy with regard to those that have been able to procure from yourself. How did they do it? How did they become aware of your products. I think the Honorable Mwemange has touched on this issue of the closure of Durban factory. I was also really interested on that aspect as well. Let me hand over back to the, let's start with the SEE in terms of responses. Honorable Dango, I see your hand is still up. Do you have more questions to ask? Okay. Mr. Pakati, you go first.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much once again, Chairperson. On the first question that was directed by Honorable Ambassador Dango on the targets for employment of persons with disabilities in the first quarter, Chairperson?
Okay. Yes, we can hear you.
All right. On the question that was posed, oh yes, on the question that was posed by Honorable Ambassador Dango, I must say that on the 150 overall target for the current fiscal year, I'm very confident that we will be able to achieve that target based on the current orders that we have, which will enable us to build much, much more financial liquidity. So because normally in each year, quarter three and quarter four are the quarters that we normally absorb. So it's an anomaly for us to start absorption in the first and second quarter. So which means the buffer for us. So the fourth quarter, we will definitely be able to meet and those two determined objectives. And I can assure Honorable Dango that we've put measures in place. We pushed for MOUs. Those MOUs that have been signed, we've got orders in place, so it will require much more demand for us to actually employ more persons with disabilities. So on that particular one, I'm very confident that we will be able to deliver. And on the next question by Honorable Moima, I must say that, it depends on the support we get from each province in terms of orders. We've been really out in every province to actually showcase our service offerings. And to say that we'll then be able to assist the provinces in terms of absorbing persons with disabilities. You'd see on my, I think it's the third slide, if you look at the Western Cape contributions, about 36 million when it comes to our tax staff.
Honorable, Osof, if you can mute your mic, please. Okay, thank you. You can continue, Mr. Pakati.
Thank you, Chair. You'd see that in the Western Cape, we normally get an order around 36 million. In other words, we're actually supplying 501 facilities, health facilities in the Western Cape. Hence, you'd find that there's much more demand for us to absorb persons with disabilities in those sectors to respond to that kind of demand. And you'd find that, we've been to Limpopo, we've been to Northwest as well. You'll see Northwest, the numbers are picking up as well. We've actually, because we're starting to get a bit of support, and you see the numbers are picking up. And in the Eastern Cape, because we understand, if you look at unemployment figures, those are hard-hit provinces, the Northwest, the Eastern Cape. In the last year, Eastern Cape received much, I think there was a report which I sent to the portfolio committee, rather. It was not the select committee, where I actually showcased the split. You'd find that Eastern Cape got the lion's share because we were responding to that. However, in terms of support, I must say that we struggled in terms of getting support in terms of orders in the province. So hence, we would like to encourage the honorable members to really also assist us in spreading the message that we have these services, and it's government to government, which makes an ease of transaction between government departments. And we went as far as to the hospitals like Lawrence, the hospitals, a number of hospitals in the Eastern Cape, to actually say that we are here and to get the CEOs of those hospitals to be aware of our services. You know, so we've been out there. We are going online now. We are actually using all the platforms to ensure that we are known out there. We can be of service to government departments with ease. So we are driving that very robustly to ensure that we are visible. And then because the more we get support, I think Western Cape is testimony that the more we get support, the more we'll be able to absorb persons with disabilities in those provinces. And on the final one, Chair, by Honorable Boshoff, I would really want to, I'm sitting with my DDG Public Employment Services. I would like him to take that particular one because it's quite a it's been on the plans. So I would request the DDG to actually assist me in answering that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think that the issue around the establishment of the factory in Mpumalanga is something that we are dealing with firstly the Premier's office. There is a disability desk that we are interacting with and the Public Works Department. They've shown us two buildings that were found not to be suitable. The one was an old prison and the other one was an old building that was built on water, and they are likely to basically destroy that building completely because the workmanship was poor, and of late they've identified land. The second issue related to that was the issue that we identified, which is around the population density of people with disability and their movement and accommodation. To give you an example, in Limpopo, we had a problem in that people were recruited from different schools, and because we don't provide accommodation, they are now staying all over in Sishuku, and we have had incidences, but at least their parents and the support system and the provincial government assistance managed to address that problem. The third issue relates to the kind of products that we can produce and the market share. You will know, Honorable Chairperson, when we raised this issue, and I think the previous question answered by the CEO around Eastern Cape, for instance, around death, we have had orders from the Eastern Cape previously on desk, but we experienced problems when some middle people came in and wanted to buy these desks and sell them at three times the price to the Eastern Cape government. So we refused, but then we have problems with the procurement people. And I think we raised the same issue with the Mpumalanga government that we will need to have some kind of an arrangement where they can guarantee the procurement of goods produced from these factories so that we can sustain them. And I think that the last issue, which is the fourth, relates to the finances. I mean, at some stage, SEE finances were quite stable, were generating more income, and that is why we're able to expand to Sishuku. But since COVID, we have taken a dive and we are beginning to reemerge. And we have also spoken to a number of other people like the Korean embassies and so on, who have promised to inject machinery in a factory if we manage to do other things. So it is on the pipeline. Once we deal with the logistical component, we'll definitely, establish one. But I think the issue is that we want to expand the footprint of SEEs if these companies can get support, because we believe that the people with disabilities are not only located in those areas where these factories are. There are a lot of people everywhere. And I think with the support, we can employ quite a lot of people with disabilities. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DDG. I don't know if Maybe I missed out the response on the Durban closure, federal closure.
Can I come in? The Durban yes. closure was as a result of a massive storm before the CEO came in. We spent 3 years, and you'll recall that those who were members of the select committee at the time, we were paying salaries which was found to be, even though the AG fell short of declaring those salaries irregular because people were being paid without working. They understood our predicament and they finally acceded to the fact that we needed to do something. We transferred half the people, about 100 kilometers to Maritzburg, and the others chose retrenchment, which we paid them out. And the last 2 years, the factory was renovated. We had agreed with the unions that those who were retrenched and who were still within the working age will be given first priority when we do the reopening. And currently, as we speak, the factory is almost done. Early January, we may receive the handover, but we're now sitting with a new problem, in that the factory in Maritzburg is on land that they want to build houses.
Mm.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Pagati. Commissioner Fakir.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. So in terms of Honorable Bossoff, I do apologize that we did not put timelines on those activities, but it is a phased manner in terms of all of those activities, especially with the SAM training. We will first target senior managers within the fund, and that should be done hopefully by January. And by March 2024, we should have everyone that is within the fund trained in terms of SAM processes, because we believe that when it comes to SAM and procurement, the responsibility does not only lie with the SEM directorate, but with each individual who actually wants the procurement of that process or provider, supplier, and service, etc. In terms of the COID Amendment Act, as you rightfully point out, it was signed by the President in assent on the 7th of April, 2023. We are allowed legally to consider a phased manner and also a transitional approach before it goes into law, where it is then gazetted into law. And before we do so, we had to have, yes, regulations that should be published. There are more than three sets. There's the Rehabilitation Regulation, Section 85, and also I think it's Section 43, I think with the third parties. Forgive me if I quote the wrong section there. But we've also added some other regulations that we would like to update. In terms of the rehabilitation regulations, we received over 22 comments. So I think you can appreciate that's why the delay in finalizing them end of October. But we did have to sit with our legal and subject matter experts to consider all those comments. So we are in the final stages of that regulation. I have spoken to my advocate. Regulations do not come to Parliament, but rather they are, what we do is we write a memorandum to the minister, and in that memorandum, we indicate clearly which comments are integrated and which ones are not, and the reasons for that non-integration. And in terms of the other regulations, we are going to publish them mid-December. And I do understand that it is holidays, et cetera. So we will give it till the end of January for those comments, which will, by that time also, we will then write to the president in terms of our process going forward for gazetting. So apologies, there will be a delay, but this is also due to the numerous comments that we're receiving. So we need to ensure that everyone's comments are considered and that the process itself is fair and transparent. So please allow us. We do forgive in terms of the delay timeline, but but it's all in the spirit of fairness and transparency. So therefore, I think our next action steps then, once we have comments on those outstanding regulations, which were much more complicated than the rehabilitation ones, we will then write to the president end of January, and hopefully by end of Feb, beginning March, we should look at gazetting the amendments. In terms of the Honorable Musha Deh, excuse me if I say that, if I mispronounce it, but on the assistive devices, as you rightfully point out, we did have an issue with the director there who is in charge. She had some sick illness issues, etc. But we did intervene directly with the junior staff, etc., to start addressing the non-service delivery. And with the CDPO in Northwest, we are in alignment also there in implementing consequence management. For the visibility and accessibility, I think if just the COO from the compensation fund can just clarify, please, if you can come in, Chairperson, just quickly on that. And then on the vacancy rate, the numbers, the Chief Director of Corporate Services, Ms. Mazibuku, will also come in to answer. COO? Okay, I don't see him answering. I don't know why. Okay, never mind. Then I'll start.
Maybe let's start with Ms. Mazibuko then.
Okay. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, our DM. Am I audible?
Yes, but there's a noise behind you. If you can tell your colleagues to move away from where you're sitting.
Okay, sorry about that, Chair. Chair, my name is Ms. Mazibuko. I'm responsible for corporate services. In terms of the question related to filling of vacancies, as a fund, we subscribe to DPSA, which mandates all government departments to have below 10% of a vacancy. With our staff complements of 980, we have 76 vacancies, which is below the threshold of 9.9. Currently, we're sitting at, as at the end of Q2, we're sitting at 7.3% of the vacancy rate. However, we are really struggling as a fund due to high turnover rates. We, during the same period, we lost 24 staff members for the same period, of which 22 were permanent staff members and 2 were interns. We do have a recruitment plan that stipulates to all the chief directorates as to when there's an official serving a notice so that we expedite the process of advertisement of posts. So currently we are at 7.37% of the vacancy rate. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson. Can I confirm who can be heard?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson and members, Deputy Minister, DG, and the other colleagues. So the visibility and accessibility strategy is one of the indicators in the five-year targets that we arrived at, which is aligned to the five-year strategic plan of the compensation fund. So the key words is to ensure that our services are accessible by the clients. So we have over 70 projects and programs within that strategy. So the projects are divided between advertisement projects like awareness sessions, educational programs, marketing and advertisement, including ensuring that there is a compliance management that is put in place to address customer complaints. So the focus is on ensuring that clients are aware of our services through the visibility programs and projects. Then on the other side is to ensure that the clients are accessing our services. So there's projects that are aimed at ensuring that we reduce the queues in the provinces through the introduction of omnichannels. I think the Commissioner of UIF mentioned some of them specifically, like for instance, the USSD, the WhatsApp chat box, and also social media, mobile apps. Live chats. So those are the omni channels that we are introducing as part of ensuring that the services are accessible and reducing the queues in the provinces, and then also lowering the cost of clients accessing our services. And all of these are then integrated to our CRM accordingly. So the aim is to ensure that we put a customer at the center of everything, in line with the current ways in which clients want to access services. And then we're using technology, the latest technology innovations to achieve that. So it's just to improve the services to the client and make sure that we are improving and then achieving our mandate as such. So we have more than 70 projects.
Thank you, Chairperson, for allowing them to come in and answer. Then on Honorable Moima, I think I did struggle. I'm not going to lie to you. I struggled about to pick up on him. He was breaking up. But what I did pick up, I think he touched on quarter one performance there, slide 15, and the poor performance in the CF adjudication and the medical claims. I think I didn't want to duplicate slides, and I didn't want to, you know, make the presentation cumbersome. But the reasons on that was the slow response on the ICT system and the hanging, and I think also from employers, we get incomplete information and we have to follow up with them, which were then to and fro. We don't achieve the 25 days on the claims adjudication. And on the medical services, I think invoices, you could see there was an improvement from the 68% to then 81% to quarter two. And what happened differently in quarter one, I think we then identified that, you know, we had a much greater number of claims compared to the previous financial year, and the human resources in the provinces were not adequate enough. So we started committing resources within head office to just assist with processing, because traditionally, as you know, with the funds, the processing and the operations is based in the provinces. And I think that's why you've also asked for the communication, which we'll provide to the secretariat on each director there. So what we did then is we just offered more resources from head office then to assist there. With our ICT challenges and what we're doing around it, so I think I did mention first priority right now in terms of a short-term goal and how do we address ICT is we have procured more servers, because the fund is a very document intensive kind of business, organization. And as we get more and more documents with more claims, it tends to slow down the system. And then also, so the first things first is to get the servers, but we're also looking at a cloud-based option, as my director ICT will present in future presentations. And that is along with aligned with the DPME, et cetera, all of those kind of structures from government on governance issues from government on how to follow in terms of cloud. But also I think with the ICT also, we are dependent and from the ICT from Dell, because everything is centralized at Dell, and we have raised the issues with Department of Employment and Labor, the ICT CIO there, and they are looking at improving the data line speeds and also just the SLAs and the requirements with CETA, so that we can have a more, accountable kind of, SLA agreement with them. In terms of the underspending on the medical, the reason I did say was because of the fraud. Because what we find is that medical service invoices are being targeted the most when we do payments. And that's why there's an underspending in terms of medical. And what we're going to do to catch up with the actual payment there of medical services is we have called our banker, EBSA, in. And they are together with ICT and with our consultant that we have through Dell. We are working on how to cover those fraudulent gaps, etc., And that hopefully should then result in a more efficient payment system, and you would then see much more increased expenditure in that program for medical benefits. Thank you.
I think there was a question about Northwest, but I couldn't hear clearly. I don't know if you have responded to that.
Okay. So. No, it's not a problem, Chairperson. I'll repeat it. With the Northwest, what we had was the director there. She was experiencing some, I think she was on sick leave, and when she came back, her performance was still below par. So with the CDPO, he has contacted me, and we are looking at an implemented consequence management on that side. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Commissioner Marupi.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just confirm if I can be heard?
Yes, loud and clear.
Thank you, sir. Chair, there's three questions that I'll ask the DG to respond. I think the first one is whether the committee can be given a chance to scrutinize the report on TUJA. I think the DG would be better placed to provide clarity on that. And also, I think that's the only question you could. Chair, if you look at the unbundling of UIF and CF from the department, what the minister has done with this project is he's requested GTEC to work on the project. GTEC have given us their first report on the groundwork. It's about an over 200-page report where they're giving us different options to look at. I think this might take a fully-fledged presentation to the committee, just walk the committee through what the report is saying and what the options are being presented, and also maybe what the department is considering in terms of these options. So maybe if the chair allows, I think that's one option that the committee can consider, so they can receive a fully fresh report on what are the options available. And then, Chair, with the Follow the Money project, so far we've been able to confirm 29 billion rands of the 60 billion rands that we paid. And the intention is to have this project completed by the 2024-2025 financial year. We want all the money done. We only had one glitch. We were busy with one bank that was going to help us to cover the other third quickly with the data solution that will enable us to confirm the few details. But we are facing a glitch that is complicated by the issue of POPIA requirements and client bank accessibility of information. So we're still negotiating that. But we intend to bring a bigger army of auditors to complete the project by end of the next financial year. The issue around whether introducing the USSD and the app are going to impact staff complements at the liver centers. Yes, that's true, Chair. We've thought about that. To an extent that last month, we've ensured that all the UIF officials across the provinces have laptops. Now, the reason why we've given them laptops is because we want them to be mobile. One of the things is we want to ensure that when you do bulk applications, case in point, if a company is retrenching, let's say 200 people, we don't want these people to come to UIF, but we want to send our staff to the company. They go there with laptops, applications are processed at the company premises. If there's any missing information, it can be done at the company premises and completed there. That's the redirection of the staff members that will be doing. One of the things that possibly the acting teacher will speak to when he responds is his drive on the inspections. That he wants to drive the inspections fully fresh and professionalize them. And that's one of the options we will be exploring is how can we redirect these individuals also to inspection, because one of the things that derail claims when they're processed is because companies are not compliant. And now it takes longer for us to process these claims. You must go to the company, ensure that compliance is up to date, capture rate, take care of the penalties and interest, and only then do you process the claim of these individuals. And inspection is going to be playing a bigger role in the scheme of things of the department. But the DG, that's a term that he's driving right now. And also employee engagement. One of the things right now, we are procuring additional 18 mobile buses. The intention of these buses, Chairperson and members, is for us to reach the rural of the rural. And when you go to the rural of the rural, the bus will have an antenna that enables connectivity much easier. So it will go with a team of people with buses. They'll be going to each of the rural areas. They'll spend a week or two. And in order for us to be able to do that kind of work, you need to have people with mobile laptops that are they're able to connect and give services to the people. And those are some of the areas that we are exploring with this additional capacity that might emerge as people are migrating to an online technology. Chair, with the SAPO matter, that those that are not compliant, we've met the SAPO executive, I think about 3 times now, and I've deployed my compliance unit to SAPO with an intention of closing the gaps of any compliance issues that the South African Post Office might have as a result. So they're working with that team right now to make sure that all the staff members are covered, their data is up to date, so that when the time comes for them to apply, we are able to process the claims correctly, Chair. I'm going to hand over to the DG Chair with your permission to respond about the forensic report on Tuja. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you so much. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Just to indicate that the forensic report has been received by the minister, and the minister has considered this report, shared it with the president, and is in the process now of processing the report through the intra-governmental mechanisms, as well as ensuring that in its proper processing, the report is then shared with the parties implicated in it to afford them the opportunity to interact with the report and to respond to what has been raised. So this process is now unfolding. It's right where we are. And we had contemplated the idea of perhaps awaiting the outcome of the urgent application the minister is making, because we believed it will strengthen the hand of the minister and the strength of the findings of the report. But a decision has now been made that we proceed either way, parallel to the court process, with the report on its own and on its own strength. And we will, once the matter has been ventilated and we have received written representations by everybody, it is the intention, stated intention of the minister, that ultimately the report will be released and made public. What we did not want to do, Chair, is that those implicated in the report get to see and know about the content of the report and that they are being tried in the court of public opinion before we have actually afforded them due process and due opportunities for them to interact with the report in dignity and in the confidence of what the labor laws spirit are intended to achieve. And so I think this is where we are with the process. Very soon, when the Synergia process has passed by, we would be in a process now to advise the committee of where we are. And I think once the members or those implicated by the report have now interacted with it, we will be free to release it to the public and even share it with the committee in that regard. So I think that's all I could say right now, but the report has fingered some of our own employees, and it is our intention to act on what the report says. Thank you very much, Chair.
Any time frame, the DG, in terms of being able to say it with the committee?
Yes, in terms of the Synergia process, Chair, we are looking at a 30-day turnaround by those implicated, and you would imagine that a report of this size And we ought to be fair. I don't think it is a matter you can just give 5 days for a person to respond. We also are cognizant that some of them may require legal assistance to be able to proffer their representations and to return. And therefore, we are looking at the end of December. We think we should be all done with all our intergovernmental processes, plus also the representation process. And I think we would be in a particular vantage point to release the report.
The acting commissioner for compensation fund, did you? Where is the commissioner? I don't know if you heard me, DG.
I've had the question. there is an acting commissioner, Chairperson, for the compensation fund, and we have taken a resolution earlier on to say that we will look at the report of PwC and what it says, and that we should defer any appointments until that has been done. But having looked carefully now, it has just been agreed with the ministry that we need to move ahead with the advertising of the position without further delays. And this was part of our request to Treasury to say that they must allow us to proceed in light of the soft moratorium that has been imposed on this. And I think we would be going out to market for it in due course.
Okay. The disadvantage on our side as a select committee is that we don't meet with yourselves often. The last time we met, as I was indicating, we were dealing with the COIDA amendment. At the time, there was a full-time commissioner for the compensation fund. Now, in this meeting, we hear that there's an acting. Without knowing the reason why, where is the full-time commissioner?
I hear you, Chair. The full-time commissioner has resigned in December last year, and that is why we have appointed an acting commissioner. The delay in the space between the appointment of a full-time commissioner and since the resignation has been occasioned by the considerations I've shared with the committee, that because we have commissioned PricewaterhouseCoopers to do a study and a run on the architecture of both the two funds, it was not opportune to consider filling the vacancies at that moment until we knew we were on a firm footing. And I think from that point of view, we have now made a decision, having adopted the report and having seen what it says. We are of the opinion that with the time lag it will take to actually arrive at a single entity for both, it is opportune that during all this period we should be having a full-time commissioner. And we think that a full-time commissioner on a contract of 5 years would not be a bad idea to proceed, and hence our intent on going to market to fill the vacancy.
Thank you very much, DJ. Honourable members, any follow-up questions on any of the entities? Any follow-up questions? Seems not. Maybe then let's go back to you, DG, for the closing remarks in the absence of any follow-up questions from members.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the members of the Portfolio Committee, Select Committee, of the NCOP. In this regard, we are cognizant that the committee represents provinces and represent provincial interests. And as you may have seen with the presentations, we have tried to be as provincial specific as we could potentially be. We are committed to ensuring that we get the two funds to where they need to be. And our stated intention is to restructure the two funds and to also ensure that from an ICT environment, we catapult them into the information age, and that they come to the level where SARS and Home Affairs and other services that government renders on a ICT platforms, they come to, and that we eliminate the unpleasant experience that is being felt by members of and citizens who utilize our services, and that experience becomes much more pleasant for them. And with this stated objective, our preoccupation is on reengineering our business processes and on the further expansions. When it comes to the SEE, we really think that it's a low-hanging fruit that we should strengthen even further than the results you have seen. We think we have given them targets for them to meet. They have shown that they actually can meet those targets. We are looking at stretch targets for them now going forward, and we're also looking at expansion possibilities, particularly because of the nature of the industries, and we are looking at designating more products that other government departments may utilize with ease. And with that, we are seeking also exemption by the Treasury for the new designated products to ensure that we can not only expand the industries involved and also product range, but also we can expand work opportunities for people with disabilities and those that are vulnerable in this regard. So to that extent, our growth trajectory with SME is quite exciting, but also importantly, it's promising that it could actually do a lot for government, because if we are serious about building government capacity, we think that this is a soft landing spot for us, and we should expand from where we are most strongest. We have seen that a province like the Western Cape is the one that is most strongest in utilization of the services here and in engaging with SEE for data revenue outcomes, and we think it's a possibility to expand this to all other 8 provinces and grow it significantly from an order book point of view. And we think that we are in a good space, and with the support of the National Treasury and on the exemption certificates we require for specific products, so that government does not go to tender for this product, it will offer this protected industries a special opportunity for them to grow. We are also looking with the unemployment rate, as it is, you have heard from the CEO highlighting the point of our targeted focus on youth unemployment, but we are also looking at historically where this fund or this industries come from, and we know that these enterprises originally were created for returning soldiers who couldn't find employment anywhere else, and we think that it's a good feat that we also consider expansion of our focus to military veterans in this regard. So with that in mind, Chair, thank you very much. I think we have had a fruitful meeting with the committee. It's not only you who decry our intermittent engagements. We too would wish to engage more and to have more interactive sessions with the select committee much more often, because we do interact with the portfolio committee more often than we do with the select committee. But we also think that because the core things of what we do is actually provinces, and our services are rendered through our 256 points of presence, and to that extent we think that the engagement with representatives of provinces is much more opportune, and that we also partner with you more on oversight visits to some of the sites, particularly as we begin to roll out our new platforms. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. We really appreciate the presentation that we've received, and the opening remarks of the minister, and your closing remarks. We also would wish, unfortunately, we have four departments and their entities, that we are meeting with from time to time. So that's why we are able to meet with one department consistently or regularly. For example, this afternoon we'll be meeting with the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition on the outcome of the AGOA forum. Next week again, possible, depending on what happened this week with regard to the company's amendment bill. We may meet the DTIC to for a briefing on the company's amendment bill. Sometimes it's difficult to meet with one department regularly, even if we wish to do so. Otherwise, we really thank you very much for coming, and also we thank the minister, the deputy minister, the DG, the CEO, the DDG, the commissioners of the UIF, and the acting commissioner of the compensation fund, and also other officials of the department and the entities. We will now excuse you, DG and the team, as we will be now dealing with the internal committee matters. Thank you so much, and goodbye for now. Honourable members, let's now deal with the internal committee matters. Mr. Bazia, if you can help us with the minutes of the 21st.